Okay, Daniel chapter 8 is in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar. So that's 2 years after the vision in Daniel chapter 7. And it has to be, like I said before, it has to be before what we had seen earlier in with Nebuchadnezzar in, I'm sorry, with Nabonidus mentioned and I'm sorry, Belshazzar, the son of Nabonidus. Belshazzar ruling in Babylon in Daniel chapter 5, and that had to happen long after these prophecies were received by Daniel in Daniel chapters 7 and 8. For out of order, Daniel chapter 5 should actually follow these two chapters. And when we get to Daniel chapter 9, then we stay with the Persian kings for the rest of Daniel. These chapters in the middle of Daniel are seriously out of order. And that's all I'm going to say with that until we read these prophecies here in Daniel 8. Okay, Noble.
Daniel chapter 8.
Microphone
muted. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me, even unto me, Daniel, after that which appeared unto me at the first. And I saw in a vision, and it came to pass, when I saw, that I was at Shushan, in the palace, which is in the province of Elam. And I saw in a vision, and I was by the river of Ulay. Then I lifted up my eyes, and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram, which had two horns. And the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, so that no beast might stand before him. Neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand, but he did according to his will and became great. And as I was considering, behold, a he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth, and touched not the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran unto him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved with choler against him, and smote the ram, and broke his two horns. And there was no power in the ram to stand before him. But he cast him down to the ground and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceedingly great toward the south, and toward the east, and toward the pleasant land. And it waxed great, even to the host of heaven. And it cast down some of the host and of the stars to the ground, and stamped upon them. Yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. And a host was given him against the daily sacrifice, by reason of transgression, and it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and prospered. Then I heard, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, How long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation, to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? And he said unto me, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. End of verse 14, unless you want me to read the interpretation.
Transgression of desolation, what's that, Bill?
I'm sorry?
I said transgression of desolation. What's that, Bill? Is it like the abomination? What?
We might think so. I mean, let me do the portion that I plan on doing comment for at the end after we see the invitation. Is that all right? No. Daniel will explain later on. He'll identify these two kingdoms later on. And if you consider a ram and a goat, ram's got two horns. Ram represents the empire of the Medes and Persians, always partners in the empire with the Persians, in the original Persian empire. And goats have one horn, and that represents Alexander the Great and his empire. Ram, through the actions that it had pushed in, it pushed westward, northward, and southward. And that describes the Persian Empire and the extension of the Persian Empire. And down into Egypt, and they attempted Ethiopia, but it wasn't always successful. And up into Scythia, and that wasn't always successful, but they ruled parts of Scythia for some time. So that ram fully agrees with the identification of the Medes and the Persians. That's what Daniel will say in the interpretation. And the goat is Alexander the Great. And that is what Daniel will say in the interpretation. The four notable ones toward the four ways of heaven are the four generals of Alexander's who ultimately divided his kingdom among himself. I was trying to dig it out, but I couldn't get to it in time before you finished. But in Diodorus Siculus's Library of History in Book 19, Chapter 105, I last spoke about this in the 100 Proofs series, Part 54, in this little horn of Daniel Chapter 8. Diodorus Siculus actually described the treaty that these four generals of Alexander's had made in order to divide up his empire. And this is the second time in Daniel, or this is the first of two occurrences in Daniel, where we are told that the Greek empire of Alexander would be divided into four pieces. So that didn't happen until after Alexander's death. And it can be pretty much established readily that Daniel wrote long before it happened. So there's actually two prophecies in Daniel. The other one's in Daniel chapter 11 concerning the splitting of Alexander's kingdom into four pieces, the kingdom of the Greeks into four pieces.
What can we say concerning the 2300 days?
Right. He magnified himself even to the prince of the host. And by him, the daily, and the word sacrifice is implied, was taken away and the place of the sanctuary was cast down.
User disconnected from her channel.
There's another place in Daniel where the daily sacrifice is taken away, and I believe that's the 70 weeks prophecy. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in this week he shall cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease. That's in a different context. I believe that in Daniel, that the taking away of a daily sacrifice represents a change in religious practice. That's my opinion. It represents a change in religion. Here, and I'm really not going to identify this little horn until interpretation of this, but here, on the 2000 and days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed. If we identify the little horn, and if we count 2,300 days, and we count each day as a year in prophecy, then that's a considerable period of time.
Hey, Bill, what if we just
start from the daily sacrifice being taken away? Interrupting. Does it start with we're doing the Bible study and we have to stay on that? And I'm speaking. Daily sacrifice being taken away, or does it start in Daniel's time when the prophecy is being given? Because that's what it seems to me to start, that it starts then. And I'll comment on that more when we finish interpretation. Michael, do you have something?
No, I'm listening.
Okay.
Microphone activated.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I've got a book coming headed my way, Aryan History, Alexander the Great. Anybody ever read that?
No, I've read all the ancient books about Alexander the Great. I'm sorry. I wouldn't read a modern book. I mean, it might be a good summary for you if you don't want to go out and read up 50 books, right? Or 40 or whatever.
Oh, by the way, so the Jews like to tell us that he was a faggot. Is there any truth to that?
That Alexander the Great was a faggot?
Well, that's what they portray it like that, yeah.
I don't think there's any proof of that whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, everything I've read, and I haven't read everything that you have, but there's no proof of that at all. It's just like, okay, they'll take one of the greatest white warriors who ever lived, kings, and just say, oh, he's a faggot because we say so. And then who's going to challenge it, right?
There's no proof of it whatsoever. Diodorus Siculus in his Library of History very often pointed out sodomy, arsenokoites. He frequently used the term. But I don't ever remember it in reference to Alexander, and I think that would be notable if I ever saw it. But no, I never saw an accusation of sodomy in reference to Alexander the Great.
And why would he?
The sad part about the life of Alexander the Great is this, that he had always kept historians and chroniclers with him to record his every move, his every deed, to keep meticulous records of everything he did, of every place he conquered, how he interacted with the local people, and his daily day-to-day events. Well, none of those survived, none of them. And the earliest records we have from the life of Alexander the Great actually date to 100 years after his death. So if he was a sodomite, where are they getting that information from? In those ancient Greek records.
I think they just made it up. I really
of
do.
Course yeah. They just made it up.
Well, even in here in the last 25 years, maybe there was a I forget whether it was a TV show or actual motion picture.
There's some sort of weird clicking going on, James.
They projected Alexander the Great as having sex with his mother. So,
well, you know what? I think, okay, so Bill, you know Koine Greek, right? Apparently, there's like three or four versions of the word love. Am I correct?
There's three or four different words that can be translated into English as love, yes.
Yeah, and so they'll take an example of somewhere where he quoted his love for a friend or something, and then they just say, well, love is love, right? He wants to bang him up the ass. But the thing is, it was a podcast I was listening to, and the guy was explaining that it was actually just like a brotherly love, right? And there's three or four different versions, but I think that's how they got away with it, or they're getting away with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's they do it all the time. They twist words all the time to fit their own agenda. They do, and that's sad. It is sad. But there's agape love, which is love that Christians should have one towards another. There's orgeis. Orgeis means that orgy. Our word orgy comes from orgeis, and that means sexual lust. Really, it doesn't really mean love at all, but for some reason in English it's always been called love. That's a freaking misnomer. It's sexual passion would be a much better translation of orgeis. And there's a few other words like philos. Philos is a brotherly love. It's the word that we see in Philadelphia, right? That's a love that you have for your brother. And that's a form of Christian love. So it's agape could also be charity, which is any act of charity has to be grounded in love or affection for the person that you're being charitable towards. The blind charity that we have today, like giving money to these charities for people we don't even know, that's a Jewish conception that I don't think that they would have ever been imagined in the ancient world.
It's not even charity. It's virtue signaling. It makes you feel better about giving money to whatever cause, but that's it.
Yeah. More importantly, it's a tax write-off.
Hey, Bill, I got a question on Chapter 8 on the timeline.
Being charitable today, it's a tax write-off.
Yeah. Sorry, Michael, what's up?
I got a question on Chapter 8 on the timeline. I think Bill mentioned that Chapter 5 should be follow Chapter 7 through 9. But on the timeline in Chapter 8, and Bill, you could help me with this. Is this where the Seleucids and the Ptolemies pop up and Antiochus pops up in this chapter?
Well, in the prophecy, but not in the chapter. I mean, the chapter is written long before the prophecy is fulfilled, right?
Right.
In the prophecy of the kingdom being divided into four winds, that's the Ptolemies and the Seleucids.
And then you got that little horn that crops up. I think it's not the little goat horn, but the other little horn would be Antiochus, right? If I remember.
No, not here.
Not there. Okay.
We'll discuss it.
User disconnected from your channel.
Shall I continue?
Yes.
Okay, verse 15. And it came to pass when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and sought for the meaning, then behold, there stood before me as the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Yolette, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell upon my face. But he said unto me, understand, O son of man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. Now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground, but he touched me and set me upright. And he said, behold, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation. For at the time appointed, the end shall be. The ram which you saw, having two horns, are the kings of Media and Persia. and the rough goat is the king of Greece, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up, and his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. And he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. And through his policy, also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. He shall stand against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without hand. And the vision of the evening and the morning, which was told, is true. Wherefore shut thou up the vision, for it shall be for many days. And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick certain days. Afterward I rose up and did the king's business, and I was astonished at the vision, but none understood it. End of Daniel chapter 8.
I don't know where to start here. Okay. Like I said, I'll go back to verse 11. Like I said, with this daily sacrifice being taken away, I believe that represents, this is what I wrote in Christlike in 2011 and in the recent series, because I can't make any more of this, is that the daily sacrifice being taken away. That word sacrifice is in italics in the King James Version. It's not in the actual text, sacrifices, but to me it implies that the removal of the daily religious worship, the removal of how you practice your religion from day to day. Your religion is how you live your life, especially in the ancient world. Today, people profess to have a religion and they live their life in a totally contrary manner to their religion. That's a modern phenomenon because everybody really is only worshiping Jews and pop culture, and they're caught up in pop culture. They might claim to be Catholics or Lutherans, but in practice, pop culture. So they're lying. The word religion really means nothing today outside of a belief. But the word religion in the ancient world was actually how you lived your life every day. And that's why I believe that daily sacrifice is only an implication of a change of one's daily habits. Daily religion, daily worship, whatever you want to term that. The transgression of desolation to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot. I really believe that's a reference to Jerusalem, where Christ said that your house will be left to you desolate. So yes, Joe, that's correct. It is related to the abomination of desolation. I really believe that. And I think that doesn't appear until Daniel chapter 11, perhaps. So we'll discuss it when we arrive at that chapter. We'll discuss that further. This may have started in Daniel's time. If that represents 2,300 years, then it actually expired in the 19th century. I don't think that the sanctuary and the host are actually cleansed yet. If it started in the time of Alexander, then it should be about to come to an end. If it started in the time of Muhammad, then we have a couple of years, 100 years left. So to me, that is, it's not very clear when we could imagine that 2003 day should start, imagining that each day is a year in prophecy.
User entered your channel.
Hey, Bill. What king are they talking about in verse 23?
Well, but let me continue, with, if you don't mind, with verse 14. This with verse 15, 16. Yep. This Ulay River is actually in Elam, and it's almost certain. There's a couple of other interpretations that put it here or there in Mesopotamia or in Persia.
User disconnected from your channel.
There was actually a river called the Eulis by the Greeks, E-U-L-U-S, which is a word with it's this word with a Greek ending, basically. And this seems to certainly be a river in Elam. Elam was called by the Greeks Elymais. It was along the Persian Gulf. It was a large district along the Persian Gulf. On the other side of the Tigris River from Babylon. And that was the original land of Elam. E-L-Y-M-A-I-S. So Elam was the capital district of the Persian Empire. And Susa was its capital. This Ulay River, Ulis to the Greeks, that was a river near Susa. Here, this angel that's speaking to Daniel, we can assume this is an angel. You know, called Daniel, O son of man. We see that term again in Daniel for at least the second time, perhaps the third. I shall make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation, for the time appointed the end shall be. Which indignation? This is this. I mean, this is covering like 1,000 years here. Perhaps before the final fall of Rome and the receiving of the kingdom by the dispersed children of Israel. It's hard to pinpoint some of these prophecies. This king, the great horn that is between his eyes, is the first king to be Alexander the Great. It would have to be Alexander the Great. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, Alexander the Great was assassinated or poisoned or whatever happened to him to kill him. It was basically assumed that he was poisoned and assassinated by poison. Kingdoms took his place. That process took 10 years to fulfill, to complete. Never had the same power as Alexander had, of course. A later time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. Clifton both truly believe that that's referring to Muhammad, who by his power was mighty, but not by his own power, because the dragon always gives its power to beasts, and he shall destroy wonderfully and shall prosper and shall practice and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. Alexander took what was nearly half, Muhammad ended up taking a good portion of the Roman world in his own lifetime, and Muhammadanism, the religion that he was attributed to him, went on and conquered half of the Roman world, including Persia, including ultimately all of Anatolia and Greece, and much of what was known to the Byzantines as Scythia and Khazaria, the kingdom of the Khazars. Muhammadanism actually overtook all of that and Persia. So that's a great swath of territory. And at that time, an awful lot of the children of Israel lived in those territories. They were Greeks, Scythians, Galatians,
Yeah, but Bill, it was actually after his death, right?
Yeah, most of the conquest was after his death, of course.
I'm pretty much sure it was all of it.
Do you think?
Well, because he was just solidifying what they had.
I'm not sure how long he lived. I thought it was debated, but that's all right.
Okay, maybe you know something I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, he died in 632. That's a little earlier than I thought.
Yeah. But I know what you're saying, but I think it could be referring to Justinian, no? Like the verse I was asking about earlier, 23 and 24,
25. No, I don't believe this refers to Justinian.
Bill, where it says I'm understanding dark sentences, you know, what could that mean in reference to Muhammad?
Well, I mean, that Quran, I'm not crediting Muhammad with the Quran, but Muhammad was partly Jewish and employed Jewish scribes, and he must have been trained in a lot of that Jewish mysticism and Talmudic literature that eventually produced Islam. So whether it was him or the religion that he's credited with founding that represents, it doesn't matter because the two were basically synonymous.
I just found in other translations it doesn't say dark sayings. Like, it says skilled in intrigue. Because when I hear dark sayings, I think of proverbs and things like that. But apparently, so that's why I checked.
Other translations have riddles, right? So
yeah, so it doesn't actually mean like he's skilled in the Bible or anything.
No, it doesn't mean that his knowledge is good. Not at all.
It just means he has worldly knowledge, right?
Well, I think worldly knowledge used for nefarious purposes or worldly knowledge that has a wicked origin.
Yeah. I don't think that it's I don't think it's referring to a non-white king here. Preface, context is other white kings. Like
Greece king. That's what you're reading into the text.
Okay.
Yeah. By peace he shall destroy many, and Islam advertises itself as the religion of peace.
Yeah, I don't know if it did back then, though. But the thing is, I just mean that was kind of Justinian's MO, though, too, right?
I actually think that it always has.
Okay.
That's the impression I've always had.
Yeah, I just think
that peace was always. Islam is always considered the religion of peace, but there's no peace unless everybody is Islam. Entered your channel.
It's just that the way he ruled, he killed a lot of people. Like at one time he killed like 50,000 people in, what do they call it? The Constantinople version, Colosseum. But I just think that he killed a ton of people, right?
Yeah, well, through his policy he shall also cause craft to prosper in his hand, he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. He shall also stand up against the Prince of Princes, which Mohammedanism totally opposes Christianity, completely opposes Christianity. Even if they claim that Jesus was a prophet, they are opposing Christianity. I've actually read the passages in the Quran on Christ and the apostles, and they actually reduce them to subservient Muslim cartoon characters. In the Quran. I've read those passages. They're patently ridiculous. The apostles telling Christ, yes, Jesus, we will be good Muslims. Yes.
Okay, like I'm not saying I know for certain, but it seems to me that because he was already dead when these things happened, And I think that the leader was his father-in-law, Ali Akbar or some stupid.
Yeah, I'm sure. But in Daniel chapter 7, we interpret that little horn to be Justinian, and Justinian was already dead when most of that happened.
Yeah, but is this referring to after he was dead?
Yes, because he would be credited with all those works because they were committed in his name. Whether he founded that religion or not is immaterial. Whether he wrote the Quran or not, because he certainly didn't, is immaterial. He was credited with being the founder of the religion. He was more or less a king or a ruler who came from the portion of Alexander's kingdom, which was ruled by the Ptolemies, from a Greek kingdom, which was ruled by the Ptolemies. That's where he came from. That portion of Arabia was ruled by the Ptolemies at that time that Muhammad arose.
Yeah, but...
It was ruled by Justinian at that time, but it was ruled by the Ptolemies earlier than that.
Yeah, because he was from basically what we now call, Justinian was from what we now call Macedonia. He was also...
Yes, but Muhammad was from Arabia, but he was from a portion of Arabia that had been controlled by the Ptolemies and the Byzantines for quite some time.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just saying that so was Justinian, right? It was a different part of the world, but he was also ruled over. That's where he's from, right?
Yes, but the little horn of Daniel 7 and the little horn of Daniel 8 are two totally different things in my
opinion. Oh, I agree. I'm just throwing it out there because I don't know, I'm not convinced.
I'm pretty convinced that the little horn of Daniel 8 is Muhammad, but I have been for a long time.
Yeah,
I just get to write a full commentary on it, but someday I will.
Okay, but I just mean of these verses, I don't think it's talking about Muhammad, man.
Well, we have the transgression of desolation, and Justinian never built a church on the Temple Mount, where Christ said, your house will be built, left to you desolate.
But when was that place built?
7th century. It was after Muhammad died, but it was still in the name of Islam. The Dome of the Rock. I'm pretty sure it was the 7th century.
Actually, it says the 11th here, but...
Is it that late?
Yeah, but...
I thought it was sooner. But that does, I mean, the scripture, the prophecy here doesn't insist it had to be in the 7th century.
Yeah.
Its initial construction was undertaken by the Umayyad Caliphate on the orders of some sand nigger during the second fitna in 691-690 BC. So that's the 7th century. That's when they started it.
Oh, it took them a long time, those fucking lazy sand niggers.
They're sand niggers, man. So to me, that's a violation of, that's a transgression against the desolation. Because they're trying to build a building up there and say that that's the house of God or a house devoted to God, their mosque, right? I mean, that's a blasphemy. Allah, actually, the oak tree.
In verse 23... it says, when the transgressors are come to the full, and interpreting this as Muhammad, would that be referring to when Byzantium was invaded by the Muslims for their idolatry and their drugs? Because, this is all around Muhammad.
Yeah, you know, I do see this as a judgment against Orthodox and Roman Catholic Christianity. I do. Mm-hmm. And I said that was my interpretation in Revelation chapter 9, and I'll stand by it, that Muhammad was a scourge against those idolaters. Yeah.
Yeah, so I feel in verse 23 when it says, when the transgressors are come to the full, it's talking about the Byzantium and the Catholics, right?
That's what I believe. And that was where they destroyed many of the people of Christ, and that was where they stood against Christ.
Yeah, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. So I can see it all coming together here.
Okay, but...
And that's where, like... Even though in the divine will of God, he's using, or I should say in a permissive will of God, he is using these sand niggers to judge sinners, to judge transgressors. Mm-hmm. They're still opposing the divine will of God, which is the recognition of Christ as God incarnate as king.
Okay, but I mean, just playing devil's advocate, he was never really a ruler or a king. He died before, like we spoke about earlier, before
come up
conquest.
Right? Come up to the bed.
So to
it's
have
it's too nice to be laying in bed.
Jack, going on there, but,
yeah, so I mean,
Janice, you need to mute your mic.
Oh God, I'm so sorry.
So it's specifically talking about a man, right? These few verses.
Oh my God. And
it doesn't
Janice,
fit.
You need to mute your mic.
I'm trying. It won't go.
Oh, there's a little icon at the top. Has a microphone with an X on it. You can click on that.
She's got it.
And then you can talk, and that's fine. Hello, Janice. No, David.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just don't see this as being a any ruler or king of Islam, because they didn't really have a ruler or king at that time. I can't remember his fucking name. It's Ali Akbar or something, right? The guy who took over for him, but he was not that powerful, and he didn't live that long either. He was a lot older than Muhammad. Muhammad died at like age 48 or something. Then this guy was around for a while. I think it's talking about somebody else. Because, well, yeah, that's what I thought.
Well, the Judeos will say it's the Antichrist, and we know that ain't true.
Okay, but what is true, right? Like, I'm not saying that you're wrong, Bill. I'm not convinced that this is Muhammad.
Abdullah was a tribal leader. He was the son of a tribal leader. He was given authority over many people. He managed to found his religion, if we want to credit to him or not, it's in his name that it was founded. He managed to found this religion. He managed to send followers to other places and spread it there. He managed to ultimately rule over this core of people where Islam was founded and from where it expanded. He ruled over, he ended up ruling over Mecca for at least 10 years before he died, I think. Or no, I'm sorry, it wasn't that long. It was months before he died. So he still ended up ruling over that city and several others. So that would be the equivalent of a king at that time. You only had to rule over one city to be a king. And I'm not saying he necessarily had to be a king, but he was definitely a ruler of sorts. And he had sufficient followers to make him a ruler over other people. He had an army of 10,000 Muslim converts in 629 when he first invaded Mecca and marched in order to conquer it. By the time of his death, it says here, most of the Arabian Peninsula had converted to Islam, to his religion.
I don't know what Muslims believe, but I'm sure.
I think that does make him a ruler sufficient to meet the criteria described in his language.
And I don't know what the Muslims believe, but I'm sure if you ask any Muslim today, I'm sure they would call Muhammad a king. I'm sure. In their eyes.
You're right about that. Forgot about that guy. Well, I was thinking it was a different guy, but it is his father-in-law, yeah. They say it's his father, but it's his father.
When was it the Turks got involved?
Not until the 10th century.
It's okay.
But they were already converted to Islam.
Yeah.
And that's why I really think it was the Jews spreading Islam.
So is it true, Bill, that Allah means curse?
Allah, as far as I ever saw, is actually related to a word that means an oak tree in Hebrew.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it means curse. And I'm going to try to look up the word, right? There's two words for oak Hebrew, though, and most of them, I think, are the other word.
I remember it being some sort of moon god.
Yeah. The word Elah is frequently... Now, some people, this Strong says it's a terebinth tree. I'm going to look up 424 here. Original Strong's concordance here. I mean, which isn't perfect, but it's usually sufficient. Okay, Allah is a curse, an imprecation, 423. Or to adjure in a bad sense, 422. But it's also an oak tree, 424. It's also a form, and this is attributed to Aramaic, of the word El, which is God. And then there's Allah, spelled exactly like the Muslims spell Allah, A-L-L-A-H, and that's an oak tree, number 427.
Yeah, and that's why I always say that they're polytheists, right? Because
right,
Ashtaroth is associated with a tree, and that's what they worship, or that's what they did worship. It was changed later.
I forgot that Allah can mean a curse, too, because I'm thinking about that Ara word, which is also a curse, so.
I think it became embarrassing for them at a certain point to admit that they worshiped the female deity, if I could put it that simply.
Yeah, that could be.
Or at least it was an expedient.
This newer Strong's dated it Bible works equates oath Elah with a terebinth tree.
With a what?
Terebinth.
Oh, okay. Yeah, or whatever.
And an ash alone, tree. Two L's is an oak tree. I don't know where to get that from.
Yeah, and like, you know, Israel, when they strayed, they worshipped groves, right? But groves just meant trees, a bunch of... Or maybe things made out of wood.
So apparently there's some sort of connection between the Ashtaroth tree or Asherah tree and the Christmas tree.
Yeah, we talked about that one time here. A juniper tree. It was like, you know, a year ago. That's why why people have Christmas trees today. Or why it's become popular in the last 100 years. Same thing coming back again, right? Comes back in different ways. Like, we think it's brand new, but it's not brand new. It's the same shit that was happening 2.5 thousand. Bill, didn't you tell your mom you want no Christmas trees and no pork?
Yeah.
When you got out of jail.
Well, she did it. She complied when my father was alive, and then she pretended to comply with me for about, I don't know, until after she left my house because she was disgusted that I wouldn't let her rule over it. And she went to live with my brother, and she went completely libtard. She really did. Pity. She denounced everything I stood for and went completely libtard when she moved in with my brother.
And what do people put on top of their Christmas trees, right? It's a five-pointed star. It's her star, right? That's.
Yeah, Christmas trees are certainly evil. I wouldn't have one in my house.
Yeah, and underneath it, you get a bunch of material gifts. You know? Like, you're going to prosper for worshiping this thing. Get some new pajamas or whatever.
We never have anything Christmas in our house. I'm wrong. I do have one Christmas tree ornament because it's Donald Trump with a carrot nose. It's pretty funny. I bought it to make a meme out of it. I never made the meme. Bought it in Georgia, I think. Maybe this year I'll try to remember.
I don't even like Easter. I fucking know. I think I know what that's all about. I mean, I get the concept. It's great that we want to celebrate, you know, Christ risen, but it's not biblical. So, you know, and they just slap it onto their fertility festival, right? They said, okay, everybody wants to party and have a big orgy, so we'll just make it Easter, right?
Yeah, nobody ever celebrates Christ at Christmas or at Easter.
Yeah.
If they celebrated Christ, they would read his words and try to put them into action in their life. No.
Yeah,
they go to church, they talk about Jesus for an hour, and then they're off at Easter egg hunts and all kinds of stupid shit.
Yeah, the whole rabbit and Easter eggs, like, you know, I get it. Rabbits, we know what they do. Everybody says, you know, you can do this.
And they have a big piece of ham's ass.
Yeah, that too.
Pig's ass.
Random verses with a shallow sermon, and the sermon's always based on personal salvation and personal things with your life and how God cares about you personally and your feelings and all this sort of stuff. They never get to national salvation, how it's a nation. It's always some sort of self-centered, feel-good, self-help religion.
Well, I'll tell you something, okay? I'm sorry to interrupt if you guys wanted to say something, but there have been many times in my life when I express.
I would rather end this. I would rather end this and reserve Daniel 9 for next week because it's going to be long.
Okay.
That's the opinion. That's the feeling I have anyway.